You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Section 4 of The Wood Beyond the World. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information and to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Read by Corrie Samuel. The Wood Beyond the World by William Morris. Chapter 10. Walter happeneth on another creature in the strange land. But as he went on through the fair and sweet land, so bright and sunlitten, and he now rested and fed, the horror and fear ran off from him, and he wandered on merrily. Neither did aught befall him save the coming of night, when he laid him down under a great spreading oak, with his drawn sword ready to hand, and fell asleep at once, and woke not till the sun was high. Then he arose and went on his way again, and the land was no worser than yesterday. But even better it might be, the greensward more flowery, the oaks and chestnuts greater. Deer of divers kinds he saw, and might easily have got his meat thereof, but he meddled not with them, since he had his bread, and was timorous of lighting a fire. Withal he doubted little of having some entertainment, and that might be naught evil, since even that fearful dwarf had been courteous to him after his kind, and had done him good and not harm. But of the happening on the wretch and the thing, whereof the dwarf spake, he was yet somewhat afeard. After he had gone a while, and when as the summer morn was at its brightest, he saw a little way ahead a grey rock, rising up from amidst of a ring of oak trees. So he turned thither straightway, for in this plain land he had seen no rocks heretofore. And as he went, he saw that there was a fountain gushing out from under the rock, which ran thence in a fair little stream. And when he had the rock, and the fountain, and the stream clear before him, lo, a child of Adam sitting beside the fountain under the shadow of the rock. He drew a little nigher, and then he saw that it was a woman, clad in green, like the sward whereon she lay. She was playing with the welling out of the water, and she had trussed up her sleeves to the shoulder, that she might thrust her bare arms therein. Her shoes of black leather lay on the grass beside her, and her feet and legs yet shone with the brook. Belike amidst the splashing and clatter of the water, she did not hear him drawing nigh, so that he was close to her before she lifted up her face and saw him, and he beheld her, that it was the maiden of the thrice-seen pageant. She reddened when she saw him, and hastily covered up her legs with her gown-skirt, and drew down her sleeves over her arms, but otherwise stirred not. As for him, he stood still, striving to speak to her, but no word might he bring out, and his heart beat sorely. But the maiden spake to him in a clear, sweet voice, wherein was now no trouble. "Thou art an alien, art thou not? For I have not seen thee before." "Yea," he said, "I am an alien. Wilt thou be good to me?" She said, "And why not? I was afraid at first, for I thought it had been the king's son. I looked to see none other, for of goodly men he has been the only one here in the land this long while, till thy coming." He said, "Didst thou look for my coming at about this time?" "Oh, nay," she said, "how might I?" Said Walter, "I wot not, but the other man seemed to be looking for me, and knew of me, and he brought me bread to eat." She looked on him anxiously, and grew somewhat pale, as she said, "What other one?" Now Walter did not know what the dwarf might be to her, fellow servant or what not, so he would not show his loathing of him, but answered wisely, "The little man in the yellow raiment." But when she heard that word, she went suddenly very pale, and leaned her head aback, and beat the air with her hands, but said presently, in a faint voice, "I pray thee talk not of that one while I am by, nor even think of him if thou mayest forbear." He spake not, and she was a little while before she came to herself again. Then she opened her eyes, and looked upon Walter, and smiled kindly on him, as though to ask his pardon for having scared him. Then she rose up in her place, and stood before him, and they were nigh together, for the stream betwixt them was little. But he still looked anxiously upon her, and said, "Have I hurt thee? I pray thy pardon." She looked on him more sweetly still, and said, "O nay, thou wouldst not hurt me, thou." Then she blushed very red, and he in likewise. But afterwards she turned pale, and laid a hand on her breast, and Walter cried out hastily, "O me, I have hurt thee again! Wherein have I done amiss?" In nought," she said, "but I am troubled, I wot not wherefore. Some thought hath taken hold of me, and I know it not. Mayhappen, in a little while, I shall know what troubles me. Now I bid thee depart from me a little, and I will abide here, and when thou comest back, it will either be that I have found it out, or not, and in either case I will tell thee." She spoke earnestly to him, but he said, "How long shall I abide away?" Her face was troubled as she answered him, "For no long while." He smiled on her and turned away, and went a space to the other side of the oak trees, whence she was still within eyeshot. There he abode until the time seemed long to him, but he schooled himself and forbore, for he said, "Lest she send me away again." So he abided until again the time seemed long to him, and she called not to him, but once again he forbore to go. Then at last he arose, and his heart beat, and he trembled, and he walked back again speedily, and came to the maiden who was still standing by the rock of the spring, her arms hanging down, her eyes downcast. She looked up at him as he drew nigh, and her face changed with eagerness as she said, "I am glad thou art come back, though it be no long while since thy departure." Sooth to say, it was scarce half an hour in all. "Nevertheless, I have been thinking many things, and thereof will I now tell thee." He said, "Maiden, there is a river betwixt us, though it be no big one. Shall I not stride over, and come to thee, that we may sit down together side by side on the green grass?" "Nay," she said, "not yet. Tarry a while, till I have told thee of matters. I must now tell thee of my thoughts in order." Her colour went and came now, and she plaited the folds of her gown with restless fingers. At last she said, "Now the first thing is this, that though thou hast seen me first only within this hour, thou hast set thine heart upon me to have me for thy speech-friend and thy darling. And if this be not so, then is all my speech, yea, and all my hope, come to an end at once." "Oh, yea," said Walter, "even so it is. But how thou hast found this out, I wot not, since now for the first time I say it, that thou art indeed my love, and my dear, and my darling." "Hush," she said, "hush, lest the wood have ears, and thy speech is loud. Abide, and I shall tell thee how I know it. Whether this thy love shall outlast the first time that thou holdest my body in thine arms, I wot not, nor dost thou. But sore is my hope that it may be so, for I also, though it be but scarce an hour since I set eyes on thee, have cast mine eyes on thee to have thee for my love and my darling and my speech-friend. And this is how I wot that thou lovest me, my friend. Now is all this dear and joyful, and overflows my heart with sweetness. But now must I tell thee of the fear and the evil which lieth behind it." Then Walter stretched out his hands to her, and cried out, "Yea, yea, but whatever evil entangle us, now we both know these two things, to wit, that thou lovest me, and I thee. Wilt thou not come hither, that I may cast mine arms about thee, and kiss thee, if not thy kind lips or thy friendly face at all, yet at least thy dear hand? Yea, that I may touch thy body in some wise." She looked on him steadily, and said softly, "Nay, this above all things must not be, and that it may not be is a part of the evil which entangles us. But hearken, friend, once again I tell thee that thy voice is overloud in this wilderness fruitful of evil. Now I have told thee, indeed, of two things whereof we both wot. But next I must needs tell thee of things whereof I wot, and thou wottest not. Yet this were better, that thou pledge thy word not to touch so much as one of my hands, and that we go together a little way hence away from these tumbled stones, and sit down upon the open greensward, whereas here is cover if there be spying abroad." Again, as she spoke, she turned very pale, but Walter said, "Since it must be so, I pledge thee my word to thee as I love thee." And therewith she knelt down and did on her footgear, and then sprang lightly over the rivulet. And then the twain of them went side by side some half a furlong thence, and sat down, shadowed by the boughs of a slim quicken tree, growing up out of the greensward, whereon for a good space around was neither bush nor brake. There began the maiden to talk soberly, and said, "This is what I must needs say to thee now, that thou art come into a land perilous for any one that loveth aught of good, from which, forsooth, I were fain that thou wert gotten away safely, even though I should die of longing for thee. As for myself, my peril is, in a measure, less than thine, I mean the peril of death. But lo, thou, this iron on my foot is token that I am a thrall, and thou knowest in what wise thralls must pay for transgressions. Furthermore, of what I am, and how I came hither, time would fail me to tell, but some while, maybe, I shall tell thee. I serve an evil mistress, of whom I may say that scarce I wot if she be a woman or not, but by some creatures is she accounted for a god, and as a god is harried. And surely never god was crueler nor colder than she. Me she hateth sorely, yet if she hated me little or naught, small were the gain to me if it were her pleasure to deal hardly by me. But as things now are, and are like to be, it would not be for her pleasure, but for her pain and loss to make an end of me. Therefore, as I said e'en now, my mere life is not in peril with her, unless, perchance, some sudden passion get the better of her, and she slay me, and repent of it thereafter. For so it is, that if it be the least evil of her conditions that she is wanton, at least wanton she is to the letter. Many a time hath she cast the net for the catching of some goodly young man, and her latest prey, save it be thou, is the young man whom I named, when first I saw thee, by the name of the King's Son. He is with us yet, and I fear him, for of late hath he wearied of her, though it is but plain truth to say of her that she is the wonder of all beauties of the world. He hath wearied of her, I say, and hath cast his eyes upon me, and if I were heedless, he would betray me to the uttermost of the wrath of my mistress. For needs must I say of him, though he be a goodly man, and now fallen into thraldom, that he hath no bowels of compassion, but is a dastard, who for an hour's pleasure would undo me, and thereafter would stand by, smiling, and taking my mistress's pardon with good cheer, while for me would be no pardon. Seest thou, therefore, how it is with me between these two cruel fools? And moreover there are others, of whom I will not even speak to thee." And therewith she put her hands before her face, and wept, and murmured, "Who shall deliver me from this death in life?" But Walter cried out, "For what else am I come hither? I!" And it was a near thing that he did not take her in his arms, but he remembered his pledged word, and drew aback from her in terror, whereas he had an inkling of why she would not suffer it, and he wept with her. But suddenly the maid left weeping, and said in a changed voice, "Friend, whereas thou speakest of delivering me, it is more like that I shall deliver thee. And now I pray thy pardon for thus grieving thee with my grief, and that more especially because thou mayest not solace thy grief with kisses and caresses. But so it was, that for once I was smitten by the thought of the anguish of this land, and the joy of all the world besides." Therewith she caught her breath in a half sob, but refrained her, and went on, "Now, dear friend and darling, take good heed to all that I shall say to thee, whereas thou must do after the teaching of my words. And first, I deem by the monster having met thee at the gates of the land, and refreshed thee, that the mistress hath looked for thy coming, nay, by thy coming hither at all, that she hath cast her net and caught thee. Hast thou noted aught that might seem to make this more like? Said Walter, three times in full daylight have I seen go past me the images of the monster, and thee, and a glorious lady, even as if ye were alive. And therewith he told her in few words how it had gone with him since that day on the quay at Langton. She said, Then it is no longer perhaps, but certain, that thou art her latest catch, and even so I deemed from the first, and, dear friend, this is why I have not suffered thee to kiss or caress me, so sore as I longed for thee. For the mistress will have thee for her only, and hath lured thee hither for naught else, and she is wise in wizardry, even as some deal am I. And wert thou to touch me with hand or mouth on my naked flesh, yea, or were it even my raiment, then would she scent the savour of thy love upon me. And then, though it may be she would spare thee, she would not spare me. Then was she silent a little, and seemed very downcast, and Walter held his peace from grief and confusion and helplessness, for of wizardry he knew naught. At last the maid spake again, and said, Nevertheless, we will not die readless. Now thou must look to this, that from henceforward it is thee, and not the king's son, whom she desireth, and that so much the more that she has not set eyes on thee. Remember this, whatsoever her seeming may be to thee. Now, therefore, shall the king's son be free, though he know it not, to cast his love on whomso he will. And, in a way, I shall also be free to yea-say him. Though, forsooth, so fulfilled is she with malice and spite, that even then she may turn round on me to punish me for doing that which she would have me do. Now let me think of it. Then was she silent a good while, and spoke at last. Yea, all things are perilous, and a perilous rede I have thought of, whereof I will not tell thee as yet, so waste not the short while by asking me. At least the worst will be no worse than what shall come if we strive not against it. And now, my friend, amongst perils it is growing more and more perilous that we twain should be longer together. But I would say one thing yet, and maybe another thereafter. Thou hast cast thy love upon one who will be true to thee, whatsoever may befall, yet is she a guileful creature, and might not help it her life long. And now for thy very sake must needs be more guileful than ever before. And as for me, the guileful, my love have I cast upon a lovely man, and one true and simple, and a stout heart. But at such a pinch is he, that if he withstand all temptation, his withstanding may belike undo both him and me. Therefore swear we both of us, that by both of us shall all guile, and all falling away, be forgiven on the day when we shall be free to love each the other as our hearts will. Walter cried out, O love, I swear it indeed, thou art my hallow, and I will swear it as on the relics of a hallow. On thy hands and thy feet I swear it. The words seemed to her a dear caress, and she laughed, and blushed, and looked full kindly on him, and then her face grew solemn, and she said, On thy life I swear it. Then she said, Now is there naught for thee to do, but to go hence straight to the Golden House, which is my mistress's house, and the only house in this land, save one which I may not see, and lieth southward no long way. How she will deal with thee, I wot not. But all I have said of her, and thee, and the king's son, is true. Therefore I say to thee, be wary and cold at heart, whatsoever outward semblance thou mayest make. If thou have to yield thee to her, then yield rather late than early, so as to gain time. Yet not so late as to seem shamed in yielding for fear's sake. Hold fast to thy life, my friend, for in warding that thou wardest me from grief without remedy. Thou wilt see me ere long, it may be tomorrow, it may be some days hence. But forget not, that what I may do, that I am doing. Take heed also that thou pay no more heed to me, or rather less than if thou wert meeting a maiden of no account in the streets of thine own town. O my love, Barren is this first farewell, as was our first meeting. But surely shall there be another meeting better than the first, and the last farewell may be long and long yet. Therewith she stood up, and he knelt before her a little while without any word, and then arose and went his ways. But when he had gone a space, he turned about, and saw her still standing in the same place. She stayed a moment when she saw him turn, and then herself turned about. So he departed through the fair land, and his heart was full with hope and fear as he went. Chapter 11. Walter happeneth on the mistress. It was but a little after noon when Walter left the maid behind. He steered south by the sun, as the maid had bidden him, and went swiftly. For, as a good knight wending to battle, the time seemed long to him till he should meet the foe. So an hour before sunset he saw something white and gay gleaming through the boles of the oak trees, and presently there was clear before him a most goodly house, builded of white marble, carved all about with knots and imagery, and the carven folk were all painted of their lively colours, whether it were their raiment or their flesh, and the housings wherein they stood all done with gold and fair hues. Gay were the windows of the house, and there was a pillared porch before the great door, with images betwixt the pillars, both of men and beasts. And when Walter looked up to the roof of the house, he saw that it gleamed and shone, for all the tiles were of yellow metal, which he deemed to be of very gold. All this he saw as he went, and tarried not to gaze upon it, for he said, "Belike there will be time for me to look on all this before I die." But he said also that, though the house was not of the greatest, it was beyond compare of all the houses of the world. Now he entered it by the porch, and came into a hall many-pillared and vaulted over, the walls painted with gold and ultramarine, the floor dark and spangled with many colours, and the windows glazed with knots and pictures. Midmost thereof was a fountain of gold, whence the water ran two ways in gold-lined runnels, spanned twice with little bridges of silver. Long was that hall, and now not very light, so that Walter was come past the fountain before he saw any folk therein. Then he looked up toward the high seat, and him seemed that great light shone thence and dazzled his eyes. And he went on a little way, and then fell on his knees, for there before him on the high seat sat that wondrous lady, whose lively image had been shown to him thrice before, and she was clad in gold and jewels, as he had erst seen her. But now she was not alone, for by her side sat a young man, goodly enough, so far as Walter might see him, and most richly clad, with a jewelled sword by his side, and a chaplet of gems on his head. They held each other by the hand, and seemed to be in dear converse together, but they spake softly, so that Walter might not hear what they said, till at last the man spake aloud to the lady, "Seest thou not that there is a man in the hall?" "Yea," she said, "I see him yonder, kneeling on his knees. Let him come nigher, and give some account of himself." So Walter stood up and drew nigh, and stood there all shamefaced and confused, looking on those twain, and wondering at the beauty of the lady. As for the man, who was slim and black-haired and straight-featured, for all his goodliness Walter accounted him little, and no wise deemed him to look chieftain-like. Now the lady spake not to Walter any more than erst, but at last the man said, "Why doest thou not kneel, as thou didst erewhile?" Walter was on the point of giving him back a fierce answer, but the lady spake and said, "Nay, friend, it matters not whether he kneel or stand, but he may say, if he will, what he would have of me, and wherefore he is come hither." Then spake Walter, for as wroth and ashamed as he was, "Lady, I have strayed into this land, and have come to thine house, as I suppose, and if I be not welcome, I may well depart straightway, and seek a way out of thy land, if thou wouldst drive me thence, as well as out of thine house." Thereat the lady turned and looked on him, and when her eyes met his, he felt a pang of fear, and desire mingled, shoot through his heart. This time she spoke to him, but coldly, without either wrath or any thought of him. "Newcomer," she said, "I have not bidden thee hither, but here mayest thou abide a while, if thou wilt. Nevertheless, take heed that here is no king's court. There is, forsooth, a folk that serveth me, or, it may be, more than one, of whom thou wert best to know naught. Of others I have but two servants, whom thou wilt see, and the one is a strange creature, who should scare thee or scathe thee with a good will, but of a good will shall serve naught save me. The other is a woman, a thrall, of little avail, save that, being compelled, she will work woman's service for me, but whom none else shall compel. Yea, but what is all this to thee, or to me that I should tell it to thee? I will not drive thee away, but if thine entertainment please thee not, make no plaint thereof to me, but depart at thy will. Now is this talk betwixt us overlong, since, as thou seest, I and this king's son are in converse together. Art thou a king's son? Nay, lady, said Walter, I am but of the sons of merchants. It matters not, she said, go thy ways into one of the chambers. And straightway she fell a-talking to the man who sat beside her, concerning the singing of the birds beneath her window in the morning, and of how she had bathed her that day in a pool of the woodlands, when she had been heated with hunting, and so forth, and all as if there had been none there save her and the king's son. But Walter departed all ashamed, as though he had been a poor man thrust away from a rich kinsman's door, and he said to himself that this woman was hateful, and naught love-worthy, and that she was little like to tempt him, despite all the fairness of her body. No one else he saw in the house that even. He found meat and drink duly served on a fair table, and thereafter he came on a goodly bed, and all things needful, but no child of Adam to do him service, or bid him welcome or warning. Nevertheless, he ate and drank and slept, and put off thought of all these things till the morrow, all the more as he hoped to see the kind maiden some time betwixt sunrise and sunset on that new day. Chapter 12. The Wearing of 4 Days in the Wood Beyond the World. He arose betimes, but found no one to greet him, neither was there any sound of folk moving within the fair house. So he but broke his fast, and then went forth and wandered amongst the trees, till he found him a stream to bathe in. And after he had washed the night off him, he lay down under a tree thereby for a while, but soon turned back toward the house, lest perchance the maid should come thither, and he should miss her. It should be said that half a bowshot from the house on that side, i.e. due north thereof, was a little hazel-brake, and round about it the trees were smaller of kind than the oaks and chestnuts he had passed through before, being mostly of birch and quicken-beam and young ash, with small wood betwixt them. So now he passed through the thicket, and coming to the edge thereof, beheld the lady and the king's son walking together hand in hand, full lovingly by seeming. He deemed it unmeet to draw back and hide him, so he went forth past them toward the house. The king's son scowled on him as he passed, but the lady, over whose beauteous face flickered the joyous morning smiles, took no more heed of him than if he had been one of the trees of the wood. But she had been so high and disdainful with him the evening before, that he thought little of that. The twain went on, skirting the hazel copse, and he could not choose but turn his eyes on them, so sorely did the lady's beauty draw them. Then befell another thing, for behind them the boughs of the hazels parted, and there stood that little evil thing, he or another of his kind, for he was quite unclad, save by his fell of yellowy-brown hair, and that he was girt with a leathern girdle, wherein was stuck an ugly two-edged knife. He stood upright a moment, and cast his eyes at Walter, and grinned, but not as if he knew him, and scarce could Walter say whether it were the one he had seen, or another. Then he cast himself down on his belly, and fell to creeping through the long grass like a serpent, following the footsteps of the lady and her lover. And now, as he crept, Walter deemed, in his loathing, that the creature was liker to a ferret than aught else. He crept on marvellous swiftly, and was soon clean out of sight. But Walter stood staring after him for a while, and then lay down by the copse side, that he might watch the house and the entry thereof. For he thought, now perchance, presently, will the kind maiden come hither to comfort me with a word or two. But hour passed by hour, and still she came not, and still he lay there, and thought of the maid, and longed for her kindness and wisdom, till he could not refrain his tears, and wept for the lack of her. Then he arose, and went and sat in the porch, and was very downcast of mood. But as he sat there, back comes the lady again, the king's son leading her by the hand. They entered the porch, and she passed by him so close that the odour of her raiment filled all the air about him, and the sleekness of her side nigh touched him, so that he could not fail to note that her garments were somewhat disarrayed, and that she kept her right hand, for her left the king's son held, to her bosom to hold the cloth together there, whereas the rich raiment had been torn off from her right shoulder. As they passed by him, the king's son once more scowled on him, wordless, but even more fiercely than before, and again the lady heeded him naught. After they had gone on a while, he entered the hall, and found it empty from end to end, and no sound in it save the tinkling of the fountain, but there was victual set on the board. He ate and drank thereof to keep life lusty within him, and then went out again to the woodside to watch and to long, and the time hung heavy on his hands, because of the lack of the fair maiden. He was of mind not to go into the house to his rest that night, but to sleep under the boughs of the forest. But a little after sunset he saw a bright-clad image, moving amidst the carven images of the porch. And the king's son came forth, and went straight to him, and said, "Thou art to enter the house, and go into thy chamber forthwith, and by no means to go forth of it betwixt sunset and sunrise. My lady will not away with thy prowling round the house in the night-tide." Therewith he turned away, and went into the house again, and Walter followed him soberly, remembering how the maid had bidden him forbear. So he went to his chamber, and slept. But amidst of the night he awoke, and deemed that he heard a voice not far off. So he crept out of his bed and peered around, lest perchance the maid had come to speak with him. But his chamber was dusk and empty. Then he went to the window and looked out, and saw the moon shining bright and white upon the greensward. And lo, the lady walking with the king's son, and he clad in thin and wanton raiment, but she in naught else, save what God had given her, of long, crispy yellow hair. Then was Walter ashamed to look on her, seeing that there was a man with her, and gat him back to his bed. But yet a long while ere he slept again, he had the image before his eyes of the fair woman on the dewy moonlit grass. The next day matters went much the same way, and the next also, save that his sorrow was increased, and he sickened sorely of hope deferred. On the fourth day also the forenoon wore as erst, but in the heat of the afternoon Walter sought to the hazel copse, and laid him down there hard by a little clearing thereof, and slept from very weariness of grief. There, after a while, he woke with words still hanging in his ears, and he knew at once that it was they twain talking together. The king's son had just done his say, and now it was the lady beginning in her honey-sweet voice, low but strong, wherein even was a little of huskiness. She said, "Otto, belike it were well to have a little patience, till we find out what the man is, and whence he cometh. It will always be easy to rid us of him. It is but a word to our dwarf king, and it will be done in a few minutes." "Patience," said the king's son angrily. "I wot not how to have patience with him, for I can see of him that he is rude and violent and headstrong, and a low-born wily one. Forsooth, he had patience enough with me the other even, when I rated him in like the dog he is, and he had no manhood to say one word to me. Soothly, as he followed after me, I had a mind to turn about and deal him a buffet on the face, to see if I could but draw one angry word from him." The lady laughed, and said, "Well, Otto, I know not. That which thou deemest dastardly in him may be but prudence and wisdom, and he an alien, far from his friends and nigh to his foes. Perchance we shall yet try him what he is. Meanwhile, I rede thee try him not with buffets, save he be weaponless and with bounden hands, else I deem that but a little while shalt thou be fain of thy blow." Now when Walter heard her words, and the voice wherein they were said, he might not forbear being stirred by them, and to him all lonely there, they seemed friendly. But he lay still, and the king's son answered the lady, and said, I know not what is in thine heart concerning this runagate, that thou shouldst bemock me with his valiancy, whereof thou knowest naught. If thou deem me unworthy of thee, send me back safe to my father's country. I may look to have worship there, yea, and the love of fair women belike. Therewith it seemed as if he had put forth his hand to the lady to caress her, for she said, Nay, lay not thine hand on my shoulder, for to-day and now it is not the hand of love, but of pride, and folly, and would-be mastery. Nay, neither shalt thou rise up and leave me, until thy mood is softer and kinder to me. Then was there silence betwixt them a while, and thereafter the king's son spake in a wheedling voice, My goddess, I pray thee pardon me, but canst thou wonder that I fear thy wearying of me, and am therefore peevish and jealous? Thou so far above the queens of the world, and I a poor youth that without thee were nothing. She answered naught, and he went on again. Was it not so, O goddess, that this man of the sons of the merchants was little heedful of thee, and thy loveliness, and thy majesty? She laughed, and said, Maybe he deemed not that he had much to gain of us, seeing thee sitting by our side, and whereas we spake to him coldly, and sternly, and disdainfully. Withal the poor youth was dazzled and shamefaced before us, that we could see in the eyes and the mien of him. Now this she spoke so kindly and sweetly, that again was Walter all stirred thereat, and it came into his mind that it might be she knew he was an eye and hearing her, and that she spake as much for him as for the king's son. But that one answered, Lady, didst thou not see somewhat else in his eyes, to wit, that they had but of late looked on some fair woman other than thee? As for me, I deem it not so unlike that on the way to thine hall he may have fallen in with thy maid. He spoke in a faltering voice, as if shrinking from some storm that might come. And forsooth the lady's voice was changed as she answered, though there was no outward heat in it, rather it was sharp and eager and cold at once. She said, Yea, that is not ill thought of, but we may not always keep our thrall in mind. If it be so as thou deemest, we shall come to know it most like when we next fall in with her. Or, if she hath been shy this time, then shall she pay the heavier for it, for we will question her by the fountain in the hall, as to what betid by the fountain of the rock. Spake the king's son, faltering yet more, Lady, were it not better to question the man himself? The maid is stout-hearted, and will not be speedily quelled into a true tale, whereas the man I deem of no account. No, no, said the lady sharply, it shall not be. Then was she silent a while, and then she said, How if the man should prove to be our master? Nay, our lady, said the king's son, thou art jesting with me, thou and thy might and thy wisdom, and all that thy wisdom may command, to be overmastered by a gangrel churl. But how if I will not have it command, king's son? Said the lady. I tell thee I know thine heart, but thou knowest not mine. But be at peace, for since thou hast prayed for this woman, nay, not with thy words, I wot, but with thy trembling hands, and thine anxious eyes and knitted brow, I say, since thou hast prayed for her so earnestly, she shall escape this time. But whether it will be to her gain in the long run, I misdoubt me. See thou to that, Otto, thou who hast held me in thine arms so oft. And now thou mayest depart if thou wilt. It seemed to Walter as if the king's son were dumbfounded at her words. He answered naught, and presently he rose from the ground and went his ways slowly toward the house. The lady lay there a little while, and then went her ways also, but turned away from the house toward the wood at the other end thereof, whereby Walter had first come thither. As for Walter, he was confused in mind and shaken in spirit, and withal he seemed to see guile and cruel deeds under the talk of those two, and waxed wrathful thereat. Yet he said to himself that naught might he do, but was as one bound hand and foot, till he had seen the maid again. End of section 4. Section 5 of The Wood Beyond the World. This is a LibriVox recording. All LibriVox recordings are in the public domain. For more information, and to volunteer, please visit LibriVox.org. Read by Corrie Samuel. The Wood Beyond the World by William Morris. Chapter 13. Now is the hunt up. Next morning was he up betimes, but he was cast down and heavy of heart, not looking for aught else to betide than had betid those last 4 days. But otherwise it fell out, for when he came down into the hall, there was the lady sitting on the high seat all alone, clad but in a coat of white linen, and she turned her head when she heard his footsteps, and looked on him, and greeted him, and said, "Come hither, guest." So he went and stood before her, and she said, "Though as yet thou hast had no welcome here, and no honour, it hath not entered into thine heart to flee from us. And to say sooth, that is well for thee, for flee away from our hand thou mightest not, nor mightest thou depart without our furtherance. But for this we can thee thank, that thou hast abided here our bidding, and eaten thine heart through the heavy wearing of 4 days, and made no plaint. Yet I cannot deem thee a dastard. Thou so well knit and shapely of body, so clear-eyed and bold of visage. Wherefore now I ask thee, art thou willing to do me service, thereby to earn thy guesting?" Walter answered her, somewhat faltering at first, for he was astonished at the change which had come over her, for now she spoke to him in friendly wise, though indeed as a great lady would speak to a young man ready to serve her in all honour. Said he, "Lady, I can thank thee humbly and heartily in that thou biddest me do thee service, for these days past I have loathed the emptiness of the hours, and naught better could I ask for than to serve so glorious a mistress in all honour." She frowned somewhat, and said, "Thou shalt not call me mistress. There is but one who so calleth me, that is my thrall, and thou art none such. Thou shalt call me lady, and I shall be well pleased that thou be my squire, and for this present thou shalt serve me in the hunting. So get thy gear, take thy bow and arrows, and gird thee to thy sword, for in this fair land may one find beasts more perilous than be buck or hart. I go now to array me. We will depart while the day is yet young, for so make we the summer day the fairest." He made obeisance to her, and she arose and went to her chamber, and Walter dight himself, and then abode her in the porch, and in less than an hour she came out of the hall, and Walter's heart beat, when he saw that the maid followed her hard at heel, and scarce might he school his eyes not to gaze over eagerly at his dear friend. She was clad, even as she was before, and was changed in no wise, save that love troubled her face when she first beheld him, and she had much ado to master it, howbeit the mistress heeded not the trouble of her, or made no semblance of heeding it, till the maiden's face was all according to its wont. But this Walter found strange, that after all that disdain of the maid's thraldom which he had heard of the mistress, and after all the threats against her, now was the mistress become mild and debonair to her, as a good lady to her good maiden. When Walter bowed the knee to her, she turned unto the maid, and said, "Look thou, my maid, at this fair new squire that I have gotten. Will not he be valiant in the greenwood? And see whether he be well shapen or not. Doth he not touch thine heart, when thou thinkest of all the woe, and fear, and trouble of the world beyond the wood, which he hath escaped, to dwell in this little land peaceably, and well beloved both by the mistress and the maid? And thou, my squire, look a little at this fair slim maiden, and say if she pleaseth thee not, didst thou deem that we had any thing so fair in this lonely place?" Frank and kind was the smile on her radiant visage, nor did she seem to note any whit the trouble on Walter's face, nor how he strove to keep his eyes from the maid. As for her, she had so wholly mastered her countenance that belike she used her face guilefully, for she stood as one humble but happy, with a smile on her face, blushing, and with her head hung down, as if shamefaced before a goodly young man, a stranger. But the lady looked upon her kindly, and said, "Come hither, child, and fear not this frank and free young man, who belike feareth thee a little, and full certainly feareth me, and yet only after the manner of men." And therewith she took the maid by the hand, and drew her to her, and pressed her to her bosom, and kissed her cheeks and her lips, and undid the lacing of her gown, and bared a shoulder of her, and swept away her skirt from her feet, and then turned to Walter, and said, "Lo thou, squire, is not this a lovely thing to have grown up amongst our rough oak boles? What, art thou looking at the iron ring there? It is naught, save a token that she is mine, and that I may not be without her." Then she took the maid by the shoulders, and turned her about as in sport, and said, "Go thou now, and bring hither the good grey ones, for needs must we bring home some venison to-day, whereas this stout warrior may not feed on naught save manchets and honey." So the maid went her way, taking care, as Walter deemed, to give no side-glance to him. But he stood there shamefaced, so confused with all this open-hearted kindness of the great lady, and with a fresh sight of the darling beauty of the maid, that he went nigh to thinking that all he had heard since he had come to the porch of the house that first time was but a dream of evil. But while he stood pondering these matters, and staring before him as one mazed, the lady laughed out in his face, and touched him on the arm, and said, "Ah, our squire, is it so that now thou hast seen my maid, thou wouldst with a good will abide behind to talk with her? But call to mind thy word pledged to me e'en now, and moreover I tell thee this for thy behoof, now she is out of earshot, that I will above all things take thee away to-day, for there be other eyes, and they naught uncomely, that look at whiles on my fair-ankled thrall, and who knows but the swords might be out if I take not the better heed, and give thee not every whit of thy will." As she spoke and moved forward, he turned a little, so that now the edge of that hazel coppice was within his eye-shot, and he deemed that once more he saw the yellow-brown evil thing crawling forth from the thicket. Then, turning suddenly on the lady, he met her eyes, and seemed in one moment of time to find a far other look in them than that of frankness and kindness, though in a flash they changed back again, and she said merrily and sweetly, "So, so, Sir Squire, now art thou awake again, and mayest for a little while look on me." Now it came into his head, with that look of hers, all that might befall him and the maid, if he mastered not his passion, nor did what he might to dissemble. So he bent the knee to her, and spoke boldly to her in her own vein, and said, "Nay, most gracious of ladies, never would I abide behind to-day, since thou farest afield. But if my speech be hampered, or mine eyes stray, is it not because my mind is confused by thy beauty, and the honey of kind words which floweth from thy mouth?" She laughed outright at his word, but not disdainfully, and said, "This is well spoken, squire, and even what a squire should say to his liege lady, when the sun is up on a fair morning, and she, and he, and all the world are glad." She stood quite near him as she spoke. Her hand was on his shoulder, and her eyes shone and sparkled. Sooth to say, that excusing of his confusion was like enough in seeming to the truth, for sure never creature was fashioned fairer than she. Clad she was for the greenwood as the hunting goddess of the Gentiles, with her green gown gathered unto her girdle, and sandals on her feet, a bow in her hand, and a quiver at her back. She was taller and bigger of fashion than the dear maiden, whiter of flesh, and more glorious, and brighter of hair, as a flower of flowers for fairness and fragrance. She said, "Thou art verily a fair squire before the hunt is up, and if thou be as good in the hunting, all will be better than well, and the guest will be welcome. But lo, here cometh our maid with the good grey ones. Go meet her, and we will tarry no longer, than for thy taking the leash in hand." So Walter looked, and saw the maid coming with two couple of great hounds in the leash, straining against her as she came along. He ran lightly to meet her, wondering if he should have a look or a half-whisper from her, but she let him take the white thongs from her hand with the same half-smile of shamefacedness still set on her face, and, going past him, came softly up to the lady, swaying like a willow branch in the wind, and stood before her, with her arms hanging down by her sides. Then the lady turned to her and said, "Look to thyself, our maid, while we are away. This fair young man thou needest not to fear, indeed, for he is good and leal. But what thou shalt do with the king's son I wot not. He is a hot lover, forsooth, but a hard man, and whiles evil is his mood, and perilous both to thee and me. And if thou do his will, it shall be ill for thee, and if thou do it not, take heed of him, and let me, and me only, come between his wrath and thee. I may do somewhat for thee. Even yesterday he was instant with me to have thee chastised after the manner of thralls, but I bade him keep silence of such words, and jeered him, and mocked him, till he went away from me peevish and in anger. So look to it that thou fall not into any trap of his contrivance." Then the maid cast herself at the mistress's feet, and kissed and embraced them, and as she rose up the lady laid her hand lightly on her head, and then, turning to Walter, cried out, "Now, squire, let us leave all these troubles and wiles and desires behind us, and flit through the merry greenwood like the Gentiles of old days." And therewith she drew up the laps of her gown till the whiteness of her knees was seen, and set off swiftly toward the wood that lay south of the house, and Walter followed, marvelling at her goodliness. Nor durst he cast a look backward to the maiden, for he knew that she desired him, and it was her only that he looked to for his deliverance from this house of guile and lies. Chapter 14. The Hunting of the Hart. As they went, they found a change in the land, which grew emptier of big and wide-spreading trees, and more beset with thickets. From one of these they roused a hart, and Walter let slip his hounds thereafter, and he and the lady followed running. Exceeding swift was she, and well-breathed withal, so that Walter wondered at her, and eager she was in the chase as the very hounds, heeding nothing the scratching of briars, or the whipping of stiff twigs as she sped on. But for all their eager hunting, the quarry outran both dogs and folk, and gat him into a great thicket, amidmost whereof was a wide plash of water. Into the thicket they followed him, but he took to the water under their eyes, and made land on the other side, and because of the tangle of underwood he swam across much faster than they might have any hope to come round on him. And so were the hunters left undone for that time. So the lady cast herself down on the green grass anigh the water, while Walter blew the hounds in and coupled them up. Then he turned round to her, and lo, she was weeping for despite that they had lost the quarry. And again did Walter wonder that so little a matter should raise a passion of tears in her. He durst not ask what ailed her, or proffer her solace, but was not ill-apaid by beholding her loveliness as she lay. Presently she raised up her head, and turned to Walter, and spake to him angrily, and said, "Squire, why dost thou stand staring at me like a fool?" "Yea, lady," he said, "but the sight of thee maketh me foolish to do aught else but to look on thee." She said in a peevish voice, "Tush, squire, the day is too far spent for soft and courtly speeches. What was good there is naught so good here. Withal I know more of thine heart than thou deemest." Walter hung down his head and reddened, and she looked on him, and her face changed, and she smiled and said, kindly this time, "Look ye, squire, I am hot and weary and ill-content, but presently it will be better with me, for my knees have been telling my shoulders that the cold water of this little lake will be sweet and pleasant this summer noonday, and that I shall forget my foil when I have taken my pleasure therein. Wherefore, go thou with thine hounds without the thicket, and there abide my coming. And I bid thee look not aback as thou goest, for therein were peril to thee. I shall not keep thee tarrying long alone." He bowed his head to her, and turned and went his ways. And now, when he was a little space away from her, he deemed her indeed a marvel of women, and well-nigh forgat all his doubts and fears concerning her, whether she were a fair image fashioned out of lies and guile, or it might be but an evil thing in the shape of a goodly woman. Forsooth, when he saw her caressing the dear and friendly maid, his heart all turned against her, despite what his eyes and his ears told his mind, and she seemed like, as it were, a serpent, enfolding the simplicity of the body which he loved. But now it was all changed, and he lay on the grass and longed for her coming, which was delayed for somewhat more than an hour. Then she came back to him, smiling and fresh and cheerful, her green gown let down to her heels. He sprang up to meet her, and she came close to him, and spake from a laughing face, "Squire, hast thou no meat in thy wallet? For, meseemeth, I fed thee when thou wert hungry the other day. Do thou now the same by me." He smiled, and louted to her, and took his wallet, and brought out thence bread, and flesh, and wine, and spread them all out before her on the green grass, and then stood by humbly before her. But she said, "Nay, my squire, sit down by me, and eat with me, for to-day are we both hunters together." So he sat down by her, trembling, but neither for awe of her greatness, nor for fear and horror of her guile and sorcery. A while they sat there together after they had done their meat, and the lady fell a-talking with Walter, concerning the parts of the earth, and the manners of men, and of his journeyings to and fro. At last she said, "Thou hast told me much, and answered all my questions wisely, and as my good squire should, and that pleaseth me. But now, tell me of the city wherein thou wert born and bred, a city whereof thou hast hitherto told me naught." "Lady," he said, "it is a fair and a great city, and to many it seemeth lovely, but I have left it, and now it is nothing to me." "Hast thou not kindred there?" said she. "Yea," said he, "and foemen withal, and a false woman waylayeth my life there." "And what was she?" said the lady. Said Walter, "She was but my wife." "Was she fair?" said the lady. Walter looked on her a while, and then said, "I was going to say that she was well nigh as fair as thou, but that may scarce be. Yet was she very fair. But now, kind and gracious lady, I will say this word to thee. I marvel that thou askest so many things concerning the city of Langton-on-Holm, where I was born, and where are my kindred yet, for meseemeth that thou knowest it thyself." "I know it, I," said the lady. "What then, thou knowest it not?" said Walter. Spake the lady, and some of her old disdain was in her words. "Dost thou deem that I wander about the world and its cheaping steads like one of the chapmen? Nay, I dwell in the wood beyond the world, and nowhere else. What hath put this word into thy mouth?" He said, "Pardon me, lady, if I have misdone, but thus it was. Mine own eyes beheld thee going down the quays of our city, and thence a shipboard, and the ship sailed out of the haven. And first of all went a strange dwarf, whom I have seen here, and then thy maid, and then went thy gracious and lovely body." The lady's face changed as he spoke, and she turned red, and then pale, and set her teeth. But she refrained her, and said, "Squire, I see of thee that thou art no liar, nor light of wit. Therefore I suppose that thou hast verily seen some appearance of me. But never have I been in Langton, nor thought thereof, nor known that such a stead there was, until thou namedst it e'en now. Wherefore I deem that an enemy hath cast the shadow of me on the air of that land." "Yea, my lady," said Walter, "and what enemy mightest thou have to have done this?" She was slow of answer, but spake at last from a quivering mouth of anger. "Knowest thou not the saw, that a man's foes are they of his own house? If I find out for a truth who hath done this, the said enemy shall have an evil hour with me." Again she was silent, and she clenched her hands and strained her limbs in the heat of her anger, so that Walter was afraid of her, and all his misgivings came back to his heart again, and he repented that he had told her so much. But in a little while all that trouble and wrath seemed to flow off her, and again was she of good cheer, and kind and sweet to him, and she said, "But in sooth, however it may be, I thank thee, my squire and friend, for telling me hereof, and surely no wight do I lay on thee. And moreover, is it not this vision which hath brought thee hither?" "So it is, lady," said he. "Then have we to thank it," said the lady, "and thou art welcome to our land." And therewith she held out her hand to him, and he took it on his knees and kissed it. And then it was as if a red-hot iron had run through his heart, and he felt faint, and bowed down his head. But he held her hand yet, and kissed it many times, and the wrist, and the arm, and knew not where he was. But she drew a little away from him, and arose, and said, "Now is the day wearing, and if we are to bear back any venison, we must buckle to the work. So arise, squire, and take the hounds, and come with me, for not far off is a little thicket, which mostly harbours foison of deer, great and small. Let us come our ways." Chapter 15. The Slaying of the Quarry. So they walked on quietly thence some half a mile, and ever the lady would have Walter to walk by her side, and not follow a little behind her, as was meet for a servant to do. And she touched his hand at whiles, as she showed him beast, and fowl, and tree, and the sweetness of her body overcame him, so that for a while he thought of nothing save her. Now, when they were come to the thicket-side, she turned to him, and said, "Squire, I am no ill woodman, so that thou mayest trust me, that we shall not be brought to shame the second time, and I shall do sagely. So knock an arrow to thy bow, and abide me here, and stir not hence. For I shall enter this thicket without the hounds, and arouse the quarry for thee, and see that thou be brisk and clean shooting, and then shalt thou have reward of me." Therewith she drew up her skirts through her girdle again, took her bent bow in her hand, and drew an arrow out of the quiver, and stepped lightly into the thicket, leaving him longing for the sight of her, as he hearkened to the tread of her feet on the dry leaves, and the rustling of the brake as she thrust through it. Thus he stood for a few minutes, and then he heard a kind of gibbering cry without words, yet as of a woman, coming from the thicket, and while his heart was yet gathering the thought that something had gone amiss, he glided swiftly, but with little stir, into the brake. He had gone but a little way, ere he saw the lady standing there in a narrow clearing, her face as pale as death, her knees cleaving together, her body swaying and tottering, her hands hanging down, and the bow and arrow fallen to the ground, and 10 yards before her, a great-headed yellow creature, crouching flat to the earth, and slowly drawing nigher. He stopped short. One arrow was already notched to the string, and another hung loose to the lesser fingers of his string hand. He raised his right hand, and drew and loosed in a twinkling. The shaft flew close to the lady's side, and straightway all the wood rung with a huge roar, as the yellow lion turned about to bite at the shaft, which had sunk deep into him behind the shoulder, as if a bolt out of the heavens had smitten him. But straightway had Walter loosed again, and then, throwing down his bow, he ran forward, with his drawn sword gleaming in his hand, while the lion weltered and rolled, but had no might to move forward. Then Walter went up to him warily, and thrust him through to the heart, and leapt aback, lest the beast might yet have life in him to smite. But he left his struggling, his huge voice died out, and he lay there, moveless, before the hunter. Walter abode a little, facing him, and then turned about to the lady, and she had fallen down in a heap whereas she stood, and lay there all huddled up and voiceless. So he knelt down by her, and lifted up her head, and bade her arise, for the foe was slain. And after a little she stretched out her limbs, and turned about on the grass, and seemed to sleep, and the colour came into her face again, and it grew soft and a little smiling. Thus she lay a while, and Walter sat by her, watching her, till at last she opened her eyes, and sat up, and knew him, and smiling on him, said, "What hath befallen, squire, that I have slept and dreamed?" He answered nothing, till her memory came back to her, and then she arose, trembling and pale, and said, "Let us leave this wood, for the enemy is therein." And she hastened away before him, till they came out at the thicket side, whereas the hounds had been left, and they were standing there uneasy and whining. So Walter coupled them, while the lady stayed not, but went away swiftly homeward, and Walter followed. At last she stayed her swift feet, and turned round on Walter, and said, "Squire, come hither." So did he, and she said, "I am weary again. Let us sit under this quicken tree and rest us." So they sat down, and she sat looking between her knees a while. And at last she said, "Why didst thou not bring the lion's hide?" He said, "Lady, I will go back and flay the beast, and bring on the hide." And he arose therewith, but she caught him by the skirts, and drew him down, and said, "Nay, thou shalt not go. Abide with me. Sit down again." He did so, and she said, "Thou shalt not go from me, for I am afraid. I am not used to looking on the face of death." She grew pale as she spoke, and set a hand to her breast, and sat so a while without speaking. At last she turned to him smiling, and said, "How was it with the aspect of me when I stood before the peril of the enemy?" And she laid a hand upon his. "O gracious one," quoth he, "thou wert, as ever, full lovely, but I feared for thee." She moved not her hand from his, and she said, "Good and true squire, I said, ere I entered the thicket, e'en now, that I would reward thee if thou slewest the quarry. He is dead, though thou hast left the skin behind upon the carcass. Ask now thy reward, but take time to think what it shall be." He felt her hand warm upon his, and drew in the sweet odour of her, mingled with the woodland scents, under the hot sun of the afternoon, and his heart was clouded with manlike desire of her. And it was a near thing, but he had spoken, and craved of her, the reward of the freedom of her maid, and that he might depart with her into other lands. But, as his mind wavered betwixt this and that, the lady, who had been eyeing him keenly, drew her hand away from him, and therewith doubt and fear flowed into his mind, and he refrained him of speech. Then she laughed merrily, and said, "The good squire is shamefaced. He feareth a lady more than a lion. Will it be a reward to thee if I bid thee to kiss my cheek?" Therewith she leaned her face toward him, and he kissed her well-favouredly, and then sat gazing on her, wondering what should betide to him on the morrow. Then she arose and said, "Come, squire, and let us home. Be not abashed, there shall be other rewards hereafter." So they went their ways quietly, and it was nigh sunset against they entered the house again. Walter looked round for the maid, but beheld her not, and the lady said to him, "I go to my chamber, and now is thy service over for this day." Then she nodded to him friendly, and went her ways. End of section 5.
Are you a financial advisor considering the Independent Registered Investment Advisor, or RIA, model and wondering where to start? Start with Schwab Advisor Services. Schwab has helped thousands evaluate the full range of options and can help you determine your best path forward. Navigate the big and small decisions by tapping into Schwab's decades worth of insights on what fuels RIA success. With Schwab Advisor Services, you have a custodian that will support you every step of the way. Start your journey today at advisorservices.schwab.com/paths.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because we know in making the most of your home, DIY doesn't just stand for do it yourself. It also means dream it yourself. And we're here to help protect the dreams you're building. Save up to 23% when you bundle home and auto. American Family Insurance. Get a quote and find an agent at AmFam.com.
Products not available in every state. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.